Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Federal News Radio's Ruben Gomez talked with OPM's Angela Bailey. She says the decision to close a building ultimately belongs to GSA.
We clearly understood that we were probably going to get a few buildings wrong in the process, but we thought it was in everyone's best interest to take a leadership role and step up and do the best that we could to help and provide the list as we knew it at that point in time.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
FederalNewsRadio.com. It's the only place to read Mike Causey. Get the latest news on your federal pay, benefits, and retirement at FederalNewsRadio.com. Search term Causey.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests today are Jason Miller, who is the executive editor of Federal News Radio. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks for coming back. And Jaime Grazia, who's president and CEO of Civil Government Consulting. This is his first time on the show. Jaime, welcome.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Give people a little background on who you are, what you do at Civil.
Civil Government Consulting, I'm president and CEO. We are a federal acquisition program management company. What we do is basically transfer knowledge both to federal government and industry on how the federal procurement process works. So what we try to do is work directly with our federal clients on trying to be better buyers and working also with our commercial partners to increase their federal business or to get into the federal market if they're trying to get into federal business. So we have a nice breadth of services to really transfer knowledge about the federal procurement process really across the board, both federally and commercially.
Cool. And that's what we're going to talk about.
Great.
Jason and I meet in the halls here at FED when I'm in town, and he started about 6 weeks ago saying we should do an acquisition show, and he's absolutely right. And on August 3rd, Jason, you had an article on federalnewsradio.com, OFPP's Gordon not stymied by bumps in the road to acquisition reform. I mean, I can't remember when there hasn't been acquisition reform.
I think it started in the 90s when Steve Kelman came up with the idea of let's move to schedules, right? The Brooks Act was too much. We can do it. And that's what that began this slow roll that we've seen over the last, what's it been, 20 years almost?
Yeah. I mean, 1992, they or 1993, they started rolling out the National Performance Review. And, you know, my favorite part, obviously, was the credit card action, because that bumped incredibly. But, you know, it also started a horrible downsizing of 1102s.
That's and then now they're making up for it. The one little anecdote I have, and I remember this so well, is I was early covering small business contracting, a newsletter that when I first got into government contracting. I went to a hearing on the Defense Department, and the small business director, a gentleman by the name of Robert Neal, who later went to jail, but that's a whole different story, was testifying, and he said, and the congressman, the senator, whomever it was, beat him up. Why do you do this? Why can't you give small businesses more business? Why are you so poor at, you know, why do you do such a bad job at this? And afterwards, you know, he just stood there and took it and yes, sir, we're doing the best we can. So afterwards, I said to him, I said, well, why do you sit there and just take that when it's their fault? When Congress cut the 1102s, when Congress forced you guys into bundling, when Congress made you decrease your acquisition workforce. And he just looked at me and said, those are all true, but that's what I'm here for. I'm here to take the stuff that Congress gives. It's that's part of the game. But in many ways, this decrease in 1102s that every agency is now trying to repopulate is because Congress cut it.
Yeah.
And Congress stopped the budgets or decreased the budgets. I mean, it's.
But that was the other Congress. That's not the one I'm in. But yeah, I mean, it's a roller coaster.
You're right on point, Jason. What we've really seen, especially right after 9/11, is this boom in certainly defense businesses with security. but just an explosion in contracting. And the 1102 workforce has been relatively flat when you take a look at the numbers. So basically, you've quadrupled the work with half the workforce, and, well, the outcomes are pretty predictable, and we're kind of in that now, thus the push for all this acquisition reform, because we have to do more with less. But the 1102s are hurting out there, and they need a lot of help.
And in many ways, it's the worst time to have this acquisition need for acquisition professionals, and then you have this budget tightening, and, okay, well, we really can't hire people. I mean, if you look at the government, how many agencies are offering buyouts? Well, who are the buyouts going to? Well, it's the people with the most experience. And it's not these GS-15s and 14s who are just hanging out doing – I mean, these are key people, but have been in government for 25, 30, 35 years. And a lot of them may not be specific 1102s, but they have that 1102 experience. I mean, it's
COTRs,
really
– COTRs.
Yeah, and program managers and project managers that have the ability, or even some of the 1102s who have the – what's it called when you can buy $1 billion worth of stuff, the warrant.
Yeah.
They have huge warrants.
Right.
They're going to walk out the door because, well, I mean, in many ways – They're being told, well, we're giving you $25,000 and early retirement, and, well, they can go get a job with company X or Y, or your company, if you're hiring. And
we're always looking for good people.
And
it's the right folks.
And, and then all of a sudden, they got their pension and a buyout and a better salary. It's an odd time.
And if you're not familiar with the jargon, we'll apologize. 1102s are the contracting workforce people. That's the OPM designation for the contracting officers. So, but you know, there's a number of things going on here, and you know, it's kind of hard to decide where to start. But let's start with the OFPP requirement for business cases for new multiple awards. What authority does OFPP really have here?
Well, I mean, like any guidance from OFPP, it really depends on the execution and, more importantly, the leadership, because without the leadership and the good execution, you're really not going to get anywhere. I mean, OMB and OFPP can put out policy guidance all day, but unless leadership decides that they want a change and they're going to implement these policies, more importantly, with accountability for their execution, we're really going to get nowhere. And we're seeing a lot of that just because 1102s are more concerned with just getting product out the door instead of looking at the policy du jour. But these business cases, I think, are extremely important because of the proliferation of IDIQs and BPAs, and kind of everybody's looking at each other because no one can keep track of all this stuff. So I think these business cases are extremely important because they have to be done to try to cut waste and redundancy, because certainly there's thousands out there. And for industry, they're very happy to see these types of actions because as industry, they have to get on all these IDIQs and all these BPAs just to be competitive. And then, of course, that's a lot of administrative costs, both from industry and from government. So I'm all for it. I hope these business cases are done. But again, leadership really has to make sure that they get done and hold people accountable if they do not get done.
And the last piece, what you said, is the most key. Hold them accountable. Because right now, it's a self-justification. It's, okay, well, I'm going to do one, so here's my justification. And there's no approval process. Now, they've talked about setting up something like a GWAC where you have to go through a specific board, but I'm not sure where that stands, if that's the plan, if that they're going to go down that path of having this kind of independent review board of all multiple work contracts. I can imagine that could be time-consuming and it could be really add some delays to the process. But this idea of business case is something that's needed for a long time. I mean, I did a story last year on the proliferation of these multiple work contracts. And one of the things that came out when you talk to agencies is, well, you're doing a Eagle 2 for a DHS, just to pick on them for a second. But you can look at anybody. Treasury has one. Justice has one that they've all just awarded. VA did T4. But pick on DHS. And I said to the procurement person at the time, why don't you just use Alliant, the GSA contract? This is 59 companies, all the big ones, all the small ones. They have a small business side. They developed the GWAC, the government-wide acquisition contract, so it matches the federal enterprise architecture. So there's not like you can only do systems engineering. It's a big, broad umbrella. And they said, oh, well, we have special needs. We have things that we need special.
Everybody's unique.
Everybody's unique, right. And the point is that one could argue maybe not. Maybe it really is buying a new system to do X really that different than buying a new system to do X somewhere else?
What's the Pareto principle factor here?
Right. And it just seems to be that somebody needs to come down with a heavier hand. And while I give Dan Gordon a lot of credit for what he's done so far, I think that if a self-justification on business cases is going to fall short.
Okay.
Yeah, and you take a look at what happened with T4 with VA, their new their attempt at an IDIQ. You take a look at really what T4 is supposed to bring to VA, and I'm looking around saying, what does Alliant not have that is so special for your needs? And I couldn't really see a justification, nor did I really see any justifications for VA for that attempt at IDIQ. I mean, the only people that are going to do business off of that anytime soon are the lawyers, as this goes through protests at GAO and the Court of Federal Claims. And I'm just kind of scratching my head why they even tried that.
And that's honestly. That's another great point. I'm sorry to jump in like that. But anytime an agency puts out a big contract, VA, $12 billion, we're only going to do 15 contractors. With all due respect, hello, you're going to get protests. I mean, look, General Dynamics IT protested. Good or bad, agree or disagree with what their protest says. The point is they realize that if they don't get on this contract, they're not doing business with IT. And this is not just GDIT. This is any company who's lost, who believes right. that they've been wronged. That's the reason why Alliant ended up with 59 winners, because GSA, in my belief, they said, we don't want to deal with the protest. We'll just let everyone on. And a lot of people criticize them for that. But hey, look, Alliant's working.
Yeah, I mean, 8A Stars is another perfect example. 599 vendors.
Yeah, and we'll get into 8A Stars on the other side of the break. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Profile America, Monday, August 29th. 6 years ago today, a hurricane slashed its nickname into the history books and into the hearts of tens of thousands of its victims. Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast, destroying communities over a wide path. Its winds and heavy rains breached the levees protecting New Orleans, and within 2 days, 80% of the historic city was underwater. The estimated death toll ranges to over 1,800. Property loss is estimated at $125 billion. More than 1 million people were evacuated during and after the storm. Full reconstruction of the devastated areas is expected to take many years. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
Retirement is expensive. You may need 70 to 90% of your pre-retirement income just to maintain your current standard of living. So how do you protect the money you've already saved from market fluctuations? How do you make sure you won't run out of money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Can't wait till Saturday? Then call me today at 301-773-3923.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? If a tree falls in the forest and no one is around, does it make a noise? Yep.
Be like the 4 million who switched to GEICO last year, and you too could start saving money. For a free rate quote, visit geico.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does 3 decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit capitalareafoodbank.org.
Ravens fans, 1500 AM Federal News Radio is your D.C. home for Ravens football. Listen to every game as the Ravens dominate the AFC North and march toward the Super Bowl.
It's intercepted! Ray Lewis with the pick! Touchdown, Ravens! The Ravens delivers the miracle!
Preseason action continues as the Ravens take on the Atlanta Falcons. Thursday, September 1st, pregame starts at 7 p.m. on 1050 AM.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for August is Vehicles for Change, a nonprofit organization repairing and providing donated cars to low-income families. A car is the most valuable poverty-fighting tool that can be provided to a low-income family, and Vehicles for Change has awarded over 3,500 cars since 1999. The car increases the opportunity for better employment and family activities never before possible. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com. This message is brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests today are Jaime Gracia, President and CEO of Seville Government Consulting, and our own Jason Miller, who is the Executive Editor of Federal News Radio. All right, somebody brought up 8A Stars, and I did a little thing on Francis's show a week or two back, and my take was, I didn't really care that there were 599 vendors on this vehicle. My point was, this is 599 companies that now have a chance to do business, and my guess was that maybe 10% of them would actually get action from this contract.
So, right. I mean, that's absolutely correct. I mean, if you take a look at any IDIQ, certainly Navy Seaport is another example. You take a look at the GSA schedule programs that have enormous amount of data to them. Basically, it's a 90-10 ratio where 10% of the companies are getting all the business. So, yeah, you've got 599 companies. Great. You've got lots of competition, opportunities for competition. But how many companies are really going to get business out of that? It's probably going to be about 10% if statistics are the same for that IDIQ as the others.
But I'll take a bit of a contrarian view on that and think I think it's better to have more than less. And my rationale is, it goes back to the old what's the Las Vegas? If you don't play, you can't win.
Right.
So if 8A Stars only let 100 companies in, and then that's 500 other companies who are saying who are just totally kept out, or at least not totally kept out, but a big chunk of them are don't have an easier way in. And what they do with it is not the government's problem. You have given them a path. The government has given these small companies a path. They have to learn to sell. They have to hire a company like you to help them understand how the market works. They have to go to someone like Mark and say, how do I get involved with this or that or the social networking piece? It's up to the company now. It's a license to hunt. You can't kill the animal, skin it, cook it, and force feed it to them. I mean, I think the more is the better in many ways.
Yeah, it's all, you know, I went to the, took my son to the county fair in Howard County a couple weeks ago, and it's you know, pick your ride, boy. You got a long line in any one you're at.
Yeah, along that point, you know, I've seen a lot of comments on LinkedIn about 8A Stars. Hey, I just got 8A Stars, now what? And that's absolutely the point is, now what? And companies have to realize that getting on these GWACs and these IDIQs, exactly that. It's just an opportunity to compete. That doesn't mean that your phone's going to be ringing off the hook. So it's very important for small businesses, certainly, to understand that they have to be very aggressive in marketing their capabilities and how they add value to the mission of that agency so they can have any chance of getting that business and being in that 10%.
And the other piece about 8A Stars I think is interesting is the 8A Stars one, the first one, was very successful. They did a lot of business. I think they almost hit the ceiling on the top end of it after, I think, 5 or 7 years. And really, if you look across the government, beyond the 8A program is a kind of an animal within itself. Agencies can do a lot with it. They can do a sole source contract under certain dollar amounts. They can put a set-aside contract out there just for 8A vendors. But having basically a government-wide acquisition contract just speeds it up that much more quickly. And I think that's a huge benefit that and agencies have goals. They have 8A small business goals. Now, Mark, if you want to go down the path of goals, that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah, we're not going.
No, I'm all
about. I don't think we have enough time.
I'll get on my soapbox for that if you want. But
we'll have Nydia Velasquez come in for that one.
Her and I can get on our soapbox together. There you go. But in the meantime, they still have goals to meet, and I think this is a great vehicle to meet those goals. And I know that sounds maybe a little rah-rah to the government, but having covered the 8A market, those companies to get into the 8A program, they may have been posting on LinkedIn, what do I do now? But they have to have some background in terms of how they work with the government, how they do business. It's not just hopefully some guy or some woman in a garage.
Well, it's not different than the companies out there saying, get a GSA schedule and you'll get government business. You know, no, you won't. You know, there's 11,000 companies that have GSA schedules. Hello, how many of them make money? Serious money, less than 10%, Jaime. I mean, you know,
yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, for companies that have these new awards, they have to understand, like I said, that aggressive marketing that's necessary. But yes, it provides the government enormous amount of flexibility to procure faster, to procure with less headaches, really, because protests are just going to go up because of this environment that we're in. Reduced competition means more ferocious and less opportunities for industry to really compete. So you're going to see protest actions go up. You're also going to see the increase of IDIQ awards and task orders go up simply because those types of protests are cut off with those types of vehicles. So, I mean, just for convenience and ease and for less headaches, you're going to see an enormous amount of task order awards on IDIQs, and that's probably how the market's going to continue the next few years as we kind of downsize in this environment.
And just to follow on, what's going to be interesting is, so right now, GAO decided just recently, maybe a couple months ago, that they'll hear task order protests again. But Congress has put a level on it at so much money. I think it was anything worth more than $10 million over the life of the contract. So that for DOD, that's still in place. For civilian agencies, expired. But then GAO ruled that, yes, we're going to hear task orders of any price. So what's going to happen in the meantime when Congress comes back? Do they raise it back to $10 million? Do they just leave it open for any protest? Because that gets to your point, then if agencies are going to go through task orders because of the shortage of 1102s and they can't hire them quickly enough, and when it comes to budget, in terms of the budget reductions, they're going to have to squeeze more, bring the price lower, so more competition. Do they then end up embroiled in protests because there's fewer and fewer task orders that are coming?
Well, that's an interesting question. What's going to happen when Congress gets back? It's a presidential election year, so you're going to see a lot of focus on those types of kitchen table type of issues. But certainly, I think this is very important. Is the process of government management is one of the most important processes that government has. So I really hope that Congress takes that standard and works these types of issues, because they're very important, not only for effective government, but also for businesses, which is very important for them to compete.
Now, the whole thing started when Jack Brooks looked at contracting and saw that basically 20 top players were taking 80-90% of the action as far as major contracts go. So they put in the Competition and Contracting Act, the Brooks Act, and, 10 years later, 5 years later, 15 years later, 20 years later, the top 20 players still take most of the action. Why? Because they're really good at what they do in performance as well as the bidding process. So, you know, there's a whole package that has to be put together here, not dissimilar from STARS. Yes, you can win a contract, but do you know how to make money from it? Jason, you've been hot on the protest side. What about the VA's protest?
Obviously, there are several companies that protested. I think this is the sixth or the seventh protest over the life of the contract, not since award. There are three companies that are protesting since award. There's still at least one company, if not two, that have pre-award protests. And it's what you expect. I mean, it's a big contract worth a lot of money, and people aren't happy that they lost, or they're unhappy that they didn't even make the down select, and that's where the protests are coming from. VA's in a little bit of they're in a quagmire in many ways, because they want to get this out, they want to begin using this, yet you have companies who believe that if they don't get on this contract, they're going to be shut out of VA and lots of VA dollars, not just, you know, a small ceiling, but $12 billion over 5 years. They feel like they believe they have to be in this. So what's VA going to do? Well, if they just let the three protesters on, that would be an easy solution to get to move it forward. I'm not sure they'll do that. And it's good. I think they're going to wait till GAO makes their decision in November.
Yeah, I expect all three vendors who protested to be on it. I mean, that's the path of least resistance. If VA wants to go ahead and start issuing task orders off this vehicle, I mean, there's just too much at stake for companies not to protest to get on that, because like we were talking about earlier, just the competition is ferocious. Not getting on vehicles like that can be the death knell of companies. I mean, certainly not GDIT, but it's going to hurt their businesses. But more importantly, it's going to hurt opportunities for small businesses, and they'll be shut out as well. So there's too much at stake for them not to protest. That's just my prediction, that you'll see these companies on the vehicle, and then the protests will go away, and hopefully they can move forward with that. But yeah, it is kind of a quagmire. Very disappointed, actually, in VA myself. But hopefully they can fix that mess and they can move forward on it, because right now it's not looking very good.
Okay. Well, the first time I was involved in a a major GWAC was back in the early 90s when Super Mini was awarded to PRC. And at roughly the same time, I was hosting a conference. And Jim Leto, then president of PRC, was one of my keynoters. And he did this very purposely because the audience was full of his competitors. He said, I maintain a $5 million slush fund on any contract to protest in, just in case I lose. So this tactic has been around for a while.
But GAO has shown that the numbers of protests have stayed fairly steady compared to the number of actions, meaning that there's a lot more actions that go out every day that never get protested.
Right.
But what you're seeing, I think, is a trend of bigger contracts getting protested. I mean, look at some of the networks, this is with networks with an X contracts from GSA. All of a sudden, those task orders, once that task order ability got ability to protest, they were protested. And then all of a sudden, you had holdups, delays at USDA to get on networks, and you had delays at other agencies who were facing those same protests. I think it's not so much that day in and day out contracts are going to be protested. I think it's the bigger ones that are going to continue to be protested. I mean, you could name them. I mean, you could easily name five of them that were protested in the last, you know, 3 or 4 years.
Right. I mean, just like we've been talking about, the opportunities for business are getting smaller. So protesting is almost a business decision at this point for those larger contracts. I mean, the smaller ones have been pretty steady, but yes, the larger contracts will continue to be protested simply because it's a business decision, and not getting on it could cost jobs at the end and business, of course.
And right, I think it's a huge business decision. And one procurement lawyer who I talk to quite often will tell me, it's never good to sue your customer. But when you feel like you have nothing left to lose, because like let's just again pick on VA and General Dynamics, they feel like if they don't get on, VA is not their customer anymore anyways, so better to be a little more aggressive than less aggressive.
Cool. I'm Mark Amtower. We're going to take our break. When we come back, we're going to talk about changes to GSA schedules. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources at MyVillageGreen.com. Visit Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda at 5415 West Cedar Lane.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Concrete, the most widely used building material in the world, can crack, say in an earthquake. So engineers are working on a concrete that heals itself. Concrete is made by mixing cement, water, sand, and rocks. M.R. Hansen, a South Dakota School of Mines and Technology civil engineering professor, wants to alter that mixture a bit, replacing some of the sand with a porous material that absorbs and stores water and keeping in bigger particles of cement.
The main thing is don't grind it quite as fine, and we can control that.
A final touch might be
some additive to the water that would make it travel through the cracks more easily.
Then when a crack occurs, the stored water would leak out, activating unused cement in those larger particles to seal the cracks. It could not only restore structural strength, but save time, money, and materials. To find out more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
On Friday, September 16th, Bethesda Cares will hold a silent auction fundraiser hosted by Re-Ra Irish Pub and Restaurant at 4931 Elm Street in Bethesda. The proceeds will help Bethesda Cares provide services to the homeless of the D.C. metro area. The event starts at 5:30, and there will be live music starting at 6:30 with jazz by the Chuck Dolan Quartet and classic rockers Second Soul at 10. For more information, call Bethesda Cares at 301-907-9244 or visit them on Facebook or on the web at BethesdaCares.org.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday here at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Please join me this week for my special guest, Spencer Mahoney, Regional Director, Southeast U.S. of the U.K. Trade and Investment Arm of the British government. He's going to tell us how to do business in the U.K. and how he can help you do that. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Concrete, the most widely used building material in the world, can crack, say in an earthquake. So engineers are working on a concrete that heals itself. Concrete is made by mixing cement, water, sand, and rocks. M.R. Hansen, a South Dakota School of Mines and Technology civil engineering professor, wants to alter that mixture a bit, replacing some of the sand with a porous material that absorbs and stores water and keeping in bigger particles of cement.
The main thing is don't grind it quite as fine, and we can control that.
A final touch might be
some additive to the water that would make it travel through the cracks more easily.
Then, when a crack occurs, the stored water would leak out, activating unused cement in those larger particles to seal the cracks. It could not only restore structural strength, but save time, money, and materials. To find out more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests today are Jaime Gracia, who's the president and CEO of Seville Government Consulting. Give me your web address.
Is Seville, S-E-V-I-L-L-E, GovCon, all one word, .com.
SevilleGovCon.com. And my other guest is Jason Miller. And this is Jason's last segment. He's got to go do an interview with somebody more important, obviously, than Amtower.
I would never say more important, Mark. Just when news breaks, I have to somehow fix it.
Believe me, I understand. I know who you're talking to.
And my web address, by the way, is federalnewsradio.com.
Federalnewsradio.com.
To be fair and equal.
There you go. Equal
Absolutely.
Time. All right. There's changes coming to the GSA schedules. I'm shocked. But these seem to be, there's several different ones. Number one, maybe a new SSI initiative for laptops. I don't know that they're calling it a strategic sourcing initiative, but a big BPA for laptops certainly reeks of strategic sourcing. But eMods and eOffers here, what's the scoop?
Two things are happening. I mean, this is something that GSA has been promising for a long time. We're going to get rid of the paper. We're going to go electronic. I mean, what are we, 2002 here, right? I mean,
right.
we've heard that many times. But they're actually doing it. With all due respect to GSA, it's always easier said than done. It's not just let's flip a switch, bring in a system. So I actually had a conversation the other day with Houston Taylor, who is in charge of the GSA schedules over at the Federal Acquisition Service. And he basically said Schedule 70 is receiving about 80 or 90% of all their offers and all their modifications online, and they're going to about 50% across the board of all schedules, and over the next 6 months or so, they're going to move it all. Everything is going to move to electronic, and the goal here is not just to save paper, but really it's going to speed up the time to get a modification in. I mean, you know this a little probably better than I do. When a company has to modify a product, it's a new version, it's an updated this or that, it's not such a, it should be a quick and easy, but I think it can usually take a lot of time, and it can be painful. And there's a big difference between, you know, a day and a week for a company many times.
Right. I mean, not only do you want to lower the procurement lead time, but you also want to save money. I mean, this kind of reminds me of a commercial for Xerox that they played a while back, where they're in a conference room and they're just surrounded by binders and binders of stuff, and they're trying to save money. And the manager says, "We're not leaving until we figure something out." And the guy says, "Well, how much does all this stuff cost?" "I don't know, millions, if not billions." And they're like, "Yeah, now we're on to something." And that's really what I want to see with government, is to really go not only to eMods, which is, I think, kind of the first step, but really e-procurement, so that you can submit proposals electronically, have them evaluated electronically, share that data electronically, and you can really save now millions, because industry is still stuck and government decides that they want to just because they want the paper, is the procurement process is very good at killing trees. But if you take a look at the time and the expenses associated with that on both ends of the equation, there's real opportunities for savings and increasing efficiencies through this e-procurement process. And GSA is doing some really great things with this e-mod process. So I hope this is a good stepping stone to increasing the amount of e-procurement that's available with the government.
Okay. Now, have you guys, I'm assuming you've both seen the news stories on doing a BPA for smaller computing devices? Yes, no, maybe?
I have not seen any yet, but I think I was actually just at a mobility conference recently, and it's coming. Mobility is a huge issue. I think what you're starting to see is this idea of government-furnished devices versus personally-owned devices. I'm not sure what's going to come next in terms of, like, do you give up on trying to put a contract together to provide smartphones and tablet computers, or do you say to the federal employee, bring your own, but here's the parameters you have to work around? So it'll be interesting to see where they go with it.
Yeah, I mobile computing is definitely the wave of the future, and I really hope government takes the opportunity to leverage these technologies because it's really about productivity. And certainly when you take a look at this week, you know, we had an earthquake. There's another big debate about telework. And certainly these types of mobile solutions offer you great opportunities for teleworking, but more importantly for productivity in the event of disasters or earthquakes or what have you. Really, mobile computing, I'm looking forward to the wave of the future because opportunities certainly for acquisition in mobile computing, I think, are pretty large, and it's an untapped market for this acquisition 2.0 environment and really trying to get out of this paper-based system that we have, and also for workflow and to really lower procurement lead times, in addition to all the levels of reviews that need to happen. So mobile computing, I think, is a great opportunity that the government needs to continue leveraging when we talk about acquisition reform and real opportunities for cost savings and productivity increases.
And the move to the mobile computing, I think, is going to happen. They know it's going to happen. So and I know, Mark, you just gave us the heads up on this Washington Technology piece around a huge BPA for laptops, desktops, other devices. I think this is a recognition from GSA. It's a recognition from many agencies that that's where their employees want to go. That's where the technology is heading.
Okay, cool. Jason, I know you have to leave. You aren't going to be with us for the last segment. So what are your final thoughts on what we've covered thus far?
I think there's a couple things that are happening around acquisition. I think that going back to the earlier conversation about 1102s, it's going to be interesting to see what the 2011 numbers look like. The Office of Federal Procurement Policy put out a request for a lot of money from Congress. They didn't really get it. There's been a big push by agencies to hire more 1102s, yet they're cutting other areas. They're maybe transferring one FTE to another slot. It'd be really interesting how much those numbers increase. Do they increase like they have been, like by a percentage or two? If they go up by 10 or 12%, I think that's going to be key to look at for what, once we get those numbers back in 2012. I think the other piece of this is going back to the conversation about justification of the multiple award contracts. What's it going to look like in the end? What's that final rule going to look like? And then once the final rule comes out, how long until they actually begin? I don't know if implementation is the best word, but when are you going to see those reviews? When is OFPP, how much teeth is OFPP going to show when agencies ask for multiple work contracts? Is it going to be like what happened with NIH CIOSP3, which was just Dan Gordon reviewed it and made a decision, which, with all due respect to Dan Gordon, maybe it's the best decision, maybe it's not. It's hard to say. Or is it going to be put through a much higher test, a much higher scale that they have to get through?
There you go. Jason, thanks for joining me. Jaime and I will be back after the break. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Here's Dr. Ron Ross, Senior Computer Scientist and Information Security Researcher, NIST, on the Federal Executive Forum on Cybersecurity, sponsored by McAfee.
That's where the real vision for the future kicks in. We've got to be able to have the systems and the infrastructure churn at a rate that even though the systems have been penetrated, the adversary's time on target is so limited that they can't do any damage.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
The rapid rise in cybersecurity threats and compliance requirements make protecting citizens' confidential information increasingly challenging. McAfee is the standard throughout federal, military, intelligence, and civilian enterprises worldwide. McAfee's capabilities are essential to assuring federal networks remain resilient against the latest cyber threats. To learn more about how McAfee can help your organization combat cybersecurity threats, call 888-VIRUS-KNOW or go to McAfee.com/government.
Next week, tune into a special edition of The Business of Government Hour, conversation with authors exploring power, security, and leadership in the 21st century. For the United States to be an effective world leader, how must it balance all three aspects of its power, defense, diplomacy, and development? What are the strategic threats facing the U.S. today? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and so much more with General Tony Zinni, former commander of the U.S. Central Command and author of Leading the Charge, Leadership Lessons from the Battlefield to the Boardroom. That's next week on The Business of Government Hour.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it. Coming to the Reagan Building, the first vendor-neutral predictive analytics conference for the government. Predictive Analytics World, September 12th and 13th. PAWGov.com, featuring keynotes from Congressman Darrell Issa and Chairman of the Recovery Board Earl Devaney, along with case studies from government agencies. This September at the Reagan Building. Learn more at PAWGov.com. That's PAWGOV.com.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
Heroes should never be forgotten. And on October 15th, we'll honor and remember the more than 45,000 brave men and women of our armed forces who've been wounded in action overseas with the GTSI Charity 5K Run Walk in Herndon, Virginia, benefiting the Wounded Warrior Project, providing much-needed services for our injured and returning veterans. For race information or to register online, visit GTSICharity5K.com or visit them on Facebook at GTSI Charity 5K.
Looking to get more from your technology investment? Look to HP Desktop Computing, powered by Vision Pro technology from AMD. Together, HP and AMD deliver more desktop computers with exceptional visual performance, enhanced energy efficiency, and advanced security features, available in a range of sleek, space-saving designs. Give everyone in your agency the power to perform at a price that makes it possible. Give them the power of HP and AMD. To find out how, go to hp.com/go/perform.
Are you ready to explore how consolidation, cloud computing, and mobility are driving change in government? Plan now to attend GuideTech and Affirm September 15th symposium to learn how 15 agencies are reforming the way they do business. Together, they'll discuss how OMB's 25-point plan is being implemented with leaders at GAO, Veterans Affairs, the Army, DHS, the FBI, and Commerce, among others, as they deliver citizen services across a variety of devices seamlessly. Register today for this half-day symposium at affirm.org.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests have been Jason Miller was with us first three segments. He's not here now. Jaime Gracia is still with me. Jaime is the president and CEO of Seville Government Consulting. You can find him at Seville, SEVILLEGOVCON, SevilleGovCon.com. Jaime, you're involved in the IAC committee, particularly on MythBusters.
Right. Part of the acquisition special interest group, kind of a offshoot of it, was the Better By Project that we founded along with Mary Davey and NAPA, the National Administration of Public Policy. So what we wanted to do is kind of continue that into kind of Better by Project version 2.0 with better government IT. And that's where we are right now, which is to collect input from industry on ways to improve government communication. And that whole process is now kind of leading into what was Mythbusters, point 24 of Vivek Kundra's 25-point plan for IT reform last year. And we've been working very closely with Dan Gord and his staff to try to help out with those types of initiatives. So that's what Better Government IT is doing for us right now. I am the industry chair for that initiative. And I also wanted to recognize Lisa Scott of OSD, who's a fantastic contracting officer, who's the government chair. So the two of us are kind of helping drive this ship in trying to improve industry and government communications by taking a look at ways that industry can help government improve their processes. And then the next step there is kind of, you know, the Mythbusters campaign for industry and helping industry understand basically how government works and some of the myths that government has about industry and trying to break the ice there, if you will, because unfortunately there's been a lot of anti-contractor sentiment from this administration. It's kind of calcified right now into a hands-off approach, and that's actually this is the worst time to be doing that, because communications between industry and government really need to improve so we can get the best product and service for the government at the best price. So that's really what the initiative is all about, kind of taking Mythbusters and taking it to the next level to really affect change in government and how they buy.
Okay, I'm not meaning to take this off on too much of a tangent, but I think that in large part, one of the problems with industry government communications and contractors getting a bad rap is recent Washington Post articles highlighting very negative aspects of contracting with very isolated incidents. And it's not a very well-rounded picture of the community at all.
No, not at all. I mean, just like we talked about in the last few segments, the 1102 community is under siege. I mean, they're understaffed and undertrained, and they're doing a fantastic job with the resources they have. But we have to do better. And certainly communications is one of those vital components that needs to improve. I mean, just kind of an isolated incident. I mean, I always tell the story. A few months ago, a contracting officer told me that industry days were illegal, which is why that person doesn't do them. And we know that's not true. But it's those types of incidents that really kind of highlight the problems that we have in industry and government communications. And there's certainly no surprise if you take a look at the bettergovit.org website, where we're actually collecting input.
Give that website again.
It's bettergovernmentit.org. That's being sponsored by ACT-IAC. And we're collecting input right now through September 9th on ways to improve government industry communications from industry standpoint. Right now, we've gotten a lot of feedback, but there's certainly no surprise that the most important and the most voted item was one-on-one sessions and breaking down the barriers of communications. So that's what we want to do with this initiative, is get this feedback. And at the end of the day, what we want to have is a very strong set of deliverables for OFPP and Dan Gordon for his folks, because what he wants to do is at the end of the year is put together guidance on vendor communications. Right now, agencies, by June 30th, were supposed to submit their vendor communications plans. Those are being reviewed by OFPP, and then they'll be posted on the agency's website. We're looking forward to being able to provide feedback on those products in addition to the deliverables that we'd like to give OFPP to help shape policy and provide them best practices so we can improve the communication process.
Okay. I'd like to go back for a second to the, and I'm not looking for the agency, contracting officer said industry days were illegal. What was the context of the conversation? Did you ask if they were going to have one, or?
Well, we were talking about doing communications, and mm-hmm. We were trying to figure out the best way to announce this need, whether it be through a source of SAW, through an industry day, and I'm just trying to provide guidance to my client on some of the best practices to do that, and everything that was in FAR Part 10 for market research. You know, we talked about FAR 15 and the ability to do one-on-ones, the need, and why you should do that. And she looked at me like I had three heads because, you know, she said, whoa, industry days are legal. I can't do that. And We just started talking about kind of her thought process and kind of her training and her organization's stance on vendor industry communications. And it was just a little bit shocking at just the arm's length relationship that particular organization had with vendor communications. And if you take a look at probably you can go to Federal Business Opportunities right now, and you'll see a lot of sources sought notices where they say no phone calls or emails. Well, that's the wrong time to be saying that. That's what you want, is those phone calls and emails, so that you can get industry input on that need, because what we need to do is a much better job with requirements development. And that's really what you're trying to do here, is put the best product available. And you can only do that with the best set of requirements, and you cannot do that without industry input. And that's kind of got me going with this initiative with Better Government IT and ACT-IACT, is because we want to try to improve government management. So it's a great platform and opportunity to be proactive in that initiative.
Okay. Now, it's still confusing. If you have a question as a vendor on sources sought and you're not allowed to use email or phone call, are you supposed to lay your head against the computer screen and hope that FBO.gov sort of by osmosis gives you an insight?
Right. I mean, what's the point, right? I mean, the whole point is trying to get input about your need and your requirement, but then you say, oh, yeah, we don't want any phone calls or emails. If we want your opinion, we'll give it to you. It's kind of a thought process. It's frustrating, certainly, because industry is begging to give input. But unfortunately, a lot of those doors are closed right now. And we're really hoping that the work that we're doing with OFPP can hopefully open those doors and really improve the vendor communication process that right now that is not there.
Yeah, but OFPP is giving guidance. They cannot mandate. So
right. I mean, like we said before, it comes down to leadership and the desire to change. And that's really in any aspect, but certainly this is no different.
This is very cool. Give me some final thoughts, some things that contractors really need to be looking at here.
Well, I mean, you have to really understand, if you don't already, that this is a relationship business. And that's going to be extremely important. We talked about IDIQs and the desire for government to buy faster, to buy more efficiently. And that's really where contractors need to focus their precious BD dollars, is building those relationships really to your core strengths, to build those relationships if you're a small business with large businesses that have these IDIQs, and really demonstrate value. Like we said, just because you got an 8A or you just got a MOBA schedule or you just received some type of award of that nature, some certification, the phone's not going to ring off the hook. You really have to be aggressive in marketing your capabilities and really demonstrating value and differentiate yourself from the competition and what you bring to the table, whether it be a skill set, a product, or what have you. You really have to show what you bring to the table and why you should be selected over somebody else. And that requires a lot of shoe leather, if you will, but you have to build those relationships and understand how the market really works. And certainly, you know, you've got a very good understanding of that, and you're one of the leaders in that. And it's really important to educate yourself on the process so that you don't waste your time, but more importantly, waste your prospects' time if you don't know the agency, you don't know their business, and you don't know how they buy. So it's very important to educate yourself on the process and then actively engage, build those relationships, and put yourself in a position of being that 10% of awardees on these vehicles.
And 10% of the companies that actually make the money. Jaime, thank you so much for joining me. Jaime Grazia of Seville Government Consulting. And you can find them at civilgovcon.com. And to submit comments on the Mythbusters, bettergovit.org.
Yes.
There you go. Again, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Thanks. This is not my day job. If you want to educate yourself and your staff,